Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hello, everybody.
And that's everybody that matters right now, because other people think they have more important things to do the day before the election.
Yeah.
And we're Justin Free this week. He's getting busy. He's got a lot of setup for us. So.
But we will say, actually, check out his content, what he's doing. If you're listening, I mean, you'll probably get this tomorrow or so if you're an early bird, but like, check it out. Listen to Justin's podcast and stuff on politics. He is the smartest person I know and most well-balanced person I can think of when it comes to just talking about this stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Justin R. Young on Twitch. So,
yeah. Good kid. We should have him on here sometime. So let's start with Brian. You know, you're on the other side of the, I was about to call it the big C, but that's a totally different illness we never want you to get.
Oh, the big C. The little C, but that doesn't seem
the most recent there. C, the C2020.
Yeah,
I guess it's 2019.
Yeah. Not
vid,
really good at
right?
The alliterations,
like,
here.
Isn't that where we settled on? Is we're calling it the vid for short?
The VD, like venereal disease. Okay, go down, Brian. So you've had a
number 19, except it's 20, about to be 2021.
Yeah. So you're like I Am Legend. You know, you're Will Smith. You're immune. You can just walk around and stuff.
I can rap. Like, I can dance. I'm very talented. I played the genie once. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got, they're got to do stuff. I would imagine a scenario. How about like, would you like to take a walk through New York City like Will Smith and I Am Legend?
Oh man. I mean, yes ish. What it makes me think of is the production stories that I heard about 28 Days Later, which by the way, to anybody, you know, in our actual demographic was a movie that came out 20 years ago. They needed to shoot somebody walking around London totally unoccupied, and they figured out that sunrise on a Sunday, you could pretty much do that for free. They just took some trash, threw it in the streets, and had them walk around, and just no cars or people happened to come by.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So imagine this. Bryce has got the camera.
Yep.
We're getting the shots of you in New York City, which, you know, parts of it are kind of, you know, not as lively.
Yeah.
Sound cool? Just a little stroll,
sell me on the project that we're shooting. What are we going for here? I mean, you're the producer in this.
Well, you know, you talked about, I think, one of our first episodes about one of the fantasies you've had. If like you were the last man in the world.
Oh, like, yeah. Like, no, I said I want to win the game of life by being the last man on the world. And if that means I have to speed things up in order to achieve my life's goal, I was totally willing to do that.
Okay, cool. So you're in New York City. Let's say we're just sort of giving kind of like we're making a movie about what this would be like, perhaps, or just you're just taking a stroll. Would you like to take a stroll from New York is what I'm asking you.
I mean, yeah, especially I love going to places under unusual circumstances. I love it when it's surreal and bizarre. That's part of the reason I loved going to Dragon Con is that it was like surrealist Burning Man in the middle of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So like a reverse of that where it's like, all of New York totally empty? Yes.
Cool. Kind of a tragedy vampire. Got it.
Yeah.
So you're walking along, and I want you to imagine, and you know this is a scenario where something's going to go wrong, okay?
You're walking sounds to me like everything's going right. We're walking.
You're walking through
Bryce,
the Bronx.
Bryce, you got the camera, right?
Got
everything's
camera
focused.
Yeah.
Yeah. Light levels. I know all this production stuff. Your f-stop is good.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Bryce, you forgot to charge the camera. Bryce had to go leave. So now it's just you.
That's fine. I hold up my fingers like in that stereotypical cinematographer's pose, you know, creating a 16:9 dynamic. Mm-hmm. By the way, do you think that we have 16:9 because our thumb to index finger ratio just happens to be that way?
No. Next question.
Okay. All right. man, I'm so glad the ghost of Andrew Maine is here to answer my question.
For our audio listeners, Brian is literally holding his fingers together like an old-timey film director.
Yes, exactly. Shaw. Okay. All right. Yeah. No. Okay. I look good. This is the selfie version.
You're standing there, Brian. What is the worst thing that happened?
I mean, if everybody's gone, what, a feral dog? Wait, maybe a cat could fall on me?
Okay.
Because cats fall from. Did we talk about this? That there's a bad level of number of stories that cats can fall from, and if
or they can't twist enough.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like below, I think it's 5 to 7 stories, they tend to be fine because they never speed up fast enough. But above 13 stories. They have enough time to twist around and go into parachute formation. And because they're so light and they have so much skin, they slow down enough that above 13 stories, they tend to land and maybe just fracture a paw or whatever.
Somewhere in Russia is a scientist who hates cats building.
And by the way,
how do you find this out?
Actuarial studies, you talk to veterinarians and one of the first questions they have, this cat fell out a window and they're like, how high? And everybody knows how many floors it is. And it turns out above 13.
He had a little bit of nutmeg. He wasn't that high.
As Mr. Miyagi said, cat fall above 13th floor, okay. Below 5th floor, okay. 5 to 13, sooner or later, just like cat falling from building.
Oh,
I remember that. That was the outtakes. So let's say somebody pops up and says, hey, Bri, big fan. What's the worst thing that you could happen to you right now in this moment? It'd be the worst.
Standing alone in the middle of an empty New York City.
I would say you are live streaming.
That's the worst
thing.
That's
the worst thing that would happen to you?
Wait, what am I doing in this scenario?
You're just standing there.
Standing around.
Just standing there. Okay.
The worst thing that can happen to any standing person.
Brian, you're waiting for a bus because Bryce took the car and he told you he's going to be running late. Okay. You're like, screw this.
Yeah. I would say the worst thing would be, wait, why is the city abandoned?
There's a thing called COVID, Brian. I don't know if you've heard this.
Okay,
Everyone's inside.
I have nothing to worry about. I already got the COVID.
Yeah, sure.
As the president says, I'm immune.
City's not abandoned. It's just like it is right now, but you're in kind of by yourself. You're waiting for a bus. Give me a couple, three worst things that could happen.
Okay, bad things. Number one, I'm about to be robbed, but I've been working out, so I feel like I can run pretty good. Number two, they're about to...
Wait, you've been working out? So you can run pretty good, not like you would try and take. I immediately thought you said, "Oh, because I'm going to take him."
Oh, good. No.
I'm just going to, again,
unless we're live streaming, in which case I will totally take him. I would
throw
rather
my money
die
on the ground.
Live streaming than be caught running away on a live stream.
There's no live stream. It's just you. I'm going to throw my money on the ground. And then I'm going to ask for a selfie so I can save this moment, like my trip to New York and my mugging.
Hashtag first time
mugging
and why.
For the camera.
Yeah. Imagine a crime-free future where, like, literally the muggers are like the street entertainers, like in Hollywood Boulevard and stuff. Like, hey, you want to get mugged? Oh yeah, cool. All right, buddy, give me
take a photo of me with Robber.
That's pretty good, actually. I rather like that. I don't want to do spoilers.
So bad things that can happen to you. Robbing.
Things that I'm worried about is I'm not worried about him being infected. I am worried about being embarrassed, but it sounds like that's not a problem.
Yeah.
It sounds like I don't have anything they would want. I think I'm good. I'm just like, hey, buddy, what's up?
No, other bad things. What other bad things do you think?
Just you. You're just standing there waiting for a bus. What is the worst thing you could think? And the thing in your head that you're worried about of like, you know, oh, what could happen to me? What?
I could be kidnapped, thrown into a sack, taken over to,
Bulgaria,
Antarctica, and forced at gunpoint to engage in bestiality porn.
Okay, no, I said the bad things.
Sorry.
Okay, so we got stick up. We've got a taken to situation.
Yep. And then sickness seems like it would be a big one, but it sounds like that's not a problem in this scenario. Oh my God. Is it a trainer who's trying to sign me up at their gym? Are they explaining to me just what a value I'm going to get for unlimited access?
Yeah. Not 24/7,
365, 24/7 customer service, and they promise all of their equipment's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Promotional pricing.
Never show up, and all of the bikes will be occupied. You could promise that?
So, Bryce, do you have anything?
I know where this is going. It's very funny because we're trying to set Brian up.
It's Planet Fitness. And I nailed it. I knew it.
We're trying to set up a freaking singularity thing, and everything is other people seem to be the worst thing in New York.
So here's the thing, Brian. You're standing there, like, man, this sidewalk feels a little loose. You fall through a sinkhole.
Not on my list, for the record. Okay. Never occurred to me.
You fall through a sinkhole 15 feet into a pit, and you hit hard, really, really hard. Oh, and one more thing. Rats.
So much to parse here.
Oh, no. Debris still falling down and hitting you in the head.
Okay, but there's nobody from Planet Fitness around.
No, like, no Planet Fitness.
I at least have that much going for me. oh my God. Yeah,
this
I've heard that the rat problem in New York is particularly bad right now. Didn't think it was sinkhole, like setting up spy versus spy traps bad.
It happens, big city. So this happened to Leonard Shoulders, poor guy who basically minding his own business. And there's a footage.
We have video of this?
We have surveillance footage. Oh my God. There are like other people around who saw him. He falls into a 15-foot hole.
Okay. And this is not, in my mind, what I was picturing was like, I don't know, maybe 20 feet in each direction. Like everything falls down at once. This is a comical Bugs Bunny, Wile E. Coyote, exactly you-sized hole that just pops open and leads you into a freaking, the third episode of the third and last, according to Mike Candon, episode of Indiana Jones with all the rats.
Yeah.
And if there wasn't, because there's about 10 people or so around. It's kind of a busy time. If there wasn't anybody around.
Also, look at the concern on all of those New Yorkers' face.
Yeah.
No, people run. People, once they realize, they turn around, look, which happens. Everybody's turned.
I mean,
turned,
at first
guy
they thought it
over.
Was a street performer.
But yeah, if no, if people, there was nobody around, you would not, you would be disappeared. That hole would disappear you.
I mean, and then shortly after, the rats would disappear you.
Oh, God.
He said he was afraid to scream because he didn't want the rats going into his mouth.
No. Oh, that's only more terrible because I believe you. Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm going to write a direct invoice to Andrew Cuomo. Yeah. Like, I request $50. Thank you.
So, Leonard Shoulders, man, dude. Our sympathies, man. That is a hell of an experience, and
They got him out, by the way. He's fine.
Can we talk real quick about just urban living in general? Because I live vaguely in suburban country, right? Like the property is, I think you could say rural-ish, you know, 7 acres, one house, you know. Then our house is in a suburban neighborhood. In the property in HQ, we see a few of those big, they're outdoor cockroaches. They're almost beetles, really. But they wander inside, and because we have pest control services, by the time they get inside, they're almost always ready to die. They're always like, kill me, like the end of Cronenberg's The Fly. But we never see any of that in, our suburban house. From everything I've heard, urban life, downtown, Manhattan, like that's just the world. You have roommates and they're either cockroaches or vermin of some variety. Have you guys had any moment? How are you with bugs and critters and the idea that you're constantly sharing space with them at all time? Because I take that back. We had two mice that made it into our suburban house, and I ordered two traps and I caught both of the mice, and we never saw another mouse except for the third one that later I found desiccated and dead in a trap.
Well, I mean, there's spiders where you are. Like, you've got, like,
tons
there are more
of spiders.
Spiders.
Yeah. No, as you walk around, as a matter of fact, all summer long, it's as though every spider is on an episode of an HGTV show called a Dream Plot. And every spider is sold the bill of goods that, oh my gosh, look at this distance between these two trees. What a perfect place to put up a web. And then they spend all night putting up their web, and then they reveal at the end of each episode that a human gets up in the morning and knocks down all of the webs on the trail that they're building. So
yeah, inside where you are, the building you're in right now, like there are spiders.
Oh, sure. I'm cool with that. David Rowan is not cool with that. I didn't know he had a spider thing.
Yeah, like in Florida, you know, palmetto bugs, cockroaches, you got that all the time. And so you fumigate regularly and you keep track of that. You know, I'm in an old building here, really old building that's like 50 years old. So, you know.
Have you seen any critters?
They get like spider stuff. I get stuff that come like, where did that come from? You know, so.
Yeah, I don't get to, you know, I think they do a pretty good job of spraying at my apartment, as well as I'm on an upper floor, which I think helps mitigate it a bit. So I'll see like wasps and stuff out on the balcony. I don't get too
always drinking like Pinot Grigio.
That's right. So
talking about saving their daughters from Nixium.
the worst I'll get is like I had a cockroach once, and it was while there were other people I was hosting a get together. And that stunk on ice. What little water bugs, the little silverfish that pop up out of the, out of the pipes, those flush down.
What pipes? The pooper pipes?
Like showers.
Oh.
Or the sink, you know? Little water bugs, I think that's what they're called, right? Silverfish? Is it silverfish?
Silverfish.
Okay, for me, water bugs means there's a type of critter that swims around in chlorinated pools that looks like a little beetle with flappy doodles and swims around. You might be able to Google through that. Silverfish, I remember seeing those as kids in California, but not so much in Texas.
Yeah, I don't see them too much. I just see them come out of the shower
in my mind they're just around and
I guess they're just around
come in,
but they're always in the basin or they're in the tub, and so you can just flush them back where they were going. Otherwise not too much of a problem. The wasps had been a problem, but that's more of a hive situation. Then
is there anything like I was fairly impressed for people who didn't see live, like there was some moment, we have various team members who have, and I try to keep track of who's the most oogie about what critter. We have various team members that are oogie about different critters. I know one of our team members is very distressed and not cool with those outdoor, like 2-inch long, flying cockroaches.
That person doesn't really like bugs at all.
Correct.
Yeah.
But particularly, like, even seeing dead ones is upsetting and so on. Mm-hmm. And there was a live broadcast that we were doing, and one of them was just hanging out on the ceiling directly above Bryce. And I found myself like, hey, I'm not messing with you, but back away from the screen, look up, and tell me how you want to proceed. Mm-hmm. And Bryce, to my surprise, was just like, he's like, okay, this is clearly a bit. Backs up, looks up, and then it's just like, sorry, what was the point of this? I'm like, it's directly above you. If it lets go, it's going to fall on your head. And Bryce was like,
oh, yeah.
And?
You know what's so weird? I was just talking with someone about that.
Open my mouth to eat it?
It's so funny you bring that up, because I was just talking about that exact moment with someone the other
day. Bryce is like, you got $50? You want to see something you'll never believe?
the thing about that moment was, like, we were here, which is like my workplace, I guess. And this is like a kind of big open air sort of space. So like it was up on the ceiling, that it has an incentive to not fall down. But like similar, if I see a cockroach in my apartment, we are either mentally blocking that out, or we are on the hunt to get neutralize
all of a permanent sudden end. You're like taking the claw part of a hammer and digging back the drywall, be like, we will find them.
I don't want to cut this conversation about bugs too short, but you know what we're bugged about?
Oh, wait, hold on. You got to give up your worst fear. Like, is there any, do bugs bug you?
I mean, the worst thing that I ever had happen was living in Florida, which is a jungle, And going out there, I had to like get rid of, we had a bunch of like a big row of palm trees, and I'm going through there chopping something, and something brown and spiky fell on my arm and rolled all the way across my arm, and it just lit up in pain. It was the most painful things I ever saw. And my dad was like, oh, it's a saddleback or something or whatever. I couldn't remember what he said it was or whatever, but it was like for several days. And it was like a poisonous caterpillar or something.
Yeah, like one of those woolly bullies or whatever with the spines all over it.
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah.
That sucked.
That sounds like it sucks.
But like, man.
Yeah.
You know what really sucks?
What sucks?
Is having no patrons at patreon.com/weirdthings. That is what I was afraid the nightmare scenario was going to be, is that you were going to tell me I got to Manhattan, was walking around, and the reason that there was nobody there is because nobody was a patron over at patreon.com/weirdthings. That, of course, is where you could support this show, keep us loud, live, and independent, giving you news of the weird, the paranormal, fringe technologies, and, of course, talking about SpaceX. Head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. Just a buck an episode, man. That's all we ask. We love hanging out with you. Mm-hmm. Come on, man. Buy us a cup of coffee once per year. Not even a good cup of coffee like a Starbucks, just like split four ways. Yeah, like a Dunkin' Donuts. I'm gonna start a war because I know some people are very passionate about where their coffee comes from.
So Brian, I want you to imagine, speaking of coffee, that we're out at sea, that you're in like your sailor, like in some British sailing fleet.
Now is this one the big sea?
Yes. Okay. Brian.
They call it the Atlantic, but right.
Got it.
So you're in the big ocean, okay? And there's a flotilla, big fleet, right? And you show up to chow, and you're like, hey, what's for dinner? And they're like, oh, shepherd's pie. You're like, ah, I hate shepherd's pie. I wanted bangers and mash. Like, oh, you know, they're having that over there. They're serving that on the, you know, the Jewel of Edinburgh, you know, the other ship over there. And just British naval history.
I was like, about to say, this sounds like a very Anglo-centric fleet that I'm in.
We're having bangers and mash.
Shepherd's pie.
No, I said it's a British fleet.
Yeah, it's a British fleet.
Oh, it is a British fleet. Yeah. Okay, good.
And so you're like, oh, jolly not good.
Good day, mate. No, I'm messing it all up.
Boy, I wanted to be bangers and mash. And they're like, oh, sorry, that's on that other boat. Oh, can you pull up next? No, we're sailors at sea. We can't do that. That's ridiculous.
It's hard to do a tuck and roll out on the sea.
Are you about to tell me that somebody like just dove out and went swimming from boat to boat in the middle of a flotilla?
These ships are hauling, by the way. These ships are moving, okay? Like, I get in me dinghy and me paddle it. Again, this is not a British accent, by the way. He's just kind of got problems. So,
if it was a British accent, what would it sound like?
Remember the James Bond movie where like he's on the sub and he needs to get out and he's like, oh, well, what about XT-10101? Like, oh, you know about that. And it's like a missile they launch out of the sub that turns into like a jet sort of thing.
Oh, that sounds like Roger Moore era, early 70s?
Or it may have been Never Say Never Again, one of the pseudo James Bond movies.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I want you to imagine
that
you're like, oh no, I need to be over there. I gotta get me mash. And they're like, well, there's this option. We need somebody to test it. Do you want to test it?
I mean, does it get me over to the boat that has the better buffet?
Yes. Get you your bangers and your mash and your HP sauce.
I think you repeat yourself, my friend, because the answer is yes.
You want to see yourself in action then?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Trial number one. What the Oh my God, somebody is full on jetpacking over to get the bangers and mash. This is amazing.
So this is one of the jet suits where you have the turbines on the arms and the backpack. And so we watched a guy take off from a small boat and now he's landing on another boat. So this is sort of a proof of concept. They want to test to see if one of these jetpack systems is usable for this. Now he's taking off.
Oh my
like,
God.
What? No bangers and mash. I'm heading back over to my dinghy.
So
he's not on a wire, is he?
No. It looks like it, though. That's how good it is.
Yeah.
So here's my question. Is there some amount of AI auto correction to For example, when you set up autopilot on various cars, you would know more about this than I would, Andrew. Like basically it knows when you're in a lane and it can feel you indicating you want to move to another lane. And then
three
it gets
people at once.
And then it gets
like super villains attacking a boat.
And then it gets you in that lane and then you're kind of in that groove. Is there any computer assistance or is this totally just skill based? Like you better
it's
be an expert
skill.
Skateboarder.
Skill.
There are three Tony Starks about to bully a PT boat is what it looks like. it's remarkable. It looks exactly how you would imagine. Imagine your fists instead of giant claws are jet turbine engines. And it's three Iron Men. I don't know how else to say it.
And they hover around the boat too. So they're kind of encircling it in sort of a Death Stranding sort of ominous, just people kind of ragdolling and floating away from the boat. Oh my God.
I have a better metaphor, Andrew. I'm thinking of the Segway. You know how the Segway is pretty good at, like, it does the thing that you have a hard time wrapping your mind around, which is two wheels or in some cases one wheel just sort of balancing on its own or whatever. Like, is there some amount of that happening?
No, there's nothing. It is all skill. It is turbines on your hands and then a turbine on your back. That is, these guys are skilled. They're trying to do it. You know, the ones where they talk about building the jet bikes and stuff, that will probably have that tech. This is literally these guys learning how to balance this
stuff.
That's
so cool.
And what we saw there, which is, this is Gravity, the company that's building these things. What we saw, which I assume is probably like, hey, British Special Forces, how would you like to be able to do this?
The Daedalus Mark I jet suit.
So I'm going to assume it's running on, I think we talked about something similar a week or two ago, and we found out that it was running on kerosene, on jet fuel. So I assume this is more of the same. Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. So how long, maybe I'm proposing a wrong thesis. I would imagine that as this would grow, you would make it easier and easier to pilot. So it would become more and more computer assisted. But do you think this is forever the domain of you know the wakeboarder, the barefoot water skier, the wake surfer, the sporting enthusiast?
Well, I think that the problem with this for the average person is that because you have these things attached to your arms, which you're sort of going to flail, an average person would flail about with, it's not going to be where an average person would do it. But if you built all of it into a unit that can compensate and adjust for it, like you talked about, like how the Segway works and self-driving cars work, that's a different matter. Like, yeah, I think that could be a thing where eventually an average person could go use. You know, think of like, you know, ski-doos and jet skis and stuff.
Right? For example, and actually jet skis is not a bad example. When I was 5 to 7 years old, I remember my dad had a pair of jet skis, and these are the old ones that you had to stand in the back, you would lift up the thing, and you would sort of do this balancing act while you were standing on. Those were definitely supplanted by the ski-doos, which is much easier to, you know, ride upon like a motorcycle. I would imagine that we might be, over the next 10, 20 years, seeing a similar thing happen when it comes to flying jet turbine things. This is a real conversation we're having about how these are going to come to market and be safe for the masses to use. This is incredible.
Yeah. These are very, very cool. But like what we're looking at here, these are, you know, you have to be experienced to be able to fly, but you can do it in 5 to 10 minutes of flight time. You know, there's going to be ways to get improved efficiency out of that at some point. Not a tremendous amount. I mean, you could spreadsheet to figure out the max amount of lift you'll ever be able to get out of, but still very, very, very cool. And, well, and, you know, we're looking at the prototype, and it's a mop bucket with fuel. And he's got the turbine attached to his hand.
And meanwhile, you're seeing like corn grass being blown over across the other side of a highway.
It's crazy. They're doing like short jumps and little hops. It's almost like, it's like moon boots.
Literally like the montage from Iron Man 1 where he's learning how to fly using the repulsor lifts.
Wow.
God, is that cool. It does look like he's tethered in these test flights, but certainly not flying around that friggin' boat. That's incredible.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So somebody sent us a link, Bryce. So apparently this looks like we you know, maybe evidence of a jet person caught in the act at an airport and maybe doing it with permission. We don't know. Could be fake. Who knows?
Yeah, I saw this on Reddit today.
Is this...
What is that, dude?
That's definitely... Okay, what?
That's crazy, right?
Okay, is this... Is
what
this
do you see?
More recent than the story that we covered? Because we talked about some aircraft pilots who were radioing saying like, yeah, looks like a dude on a jetpack anyway, flying to Tokyo.
So this was posted... I found this on Reddit's WTF subreddit. This was posted 1 hour ago. Hopefully it's not a repost, but I know that with that story having broken weeks ago, I haven't seen any of this footage before.
If somebody's making a habit of flying around airports in a jetpack, then it makes sense that first you would hear about it from an eyewitness account from a pilot, then later you would get somebody who happened to catch it on video.
Yeah.
And that's the weird part, is even if this is a fake, certainly the sentiment or the implication that somebody's flying around a jetpack around an airport is well established.
And I'll throw a hypothesis out there too, that not to say this is what I think is taking place, but there have been cases where, you know, pilots have said, oh, we see a strange light formation out there that's behaving in a different path. We see something strange. If it's the military testing a secret craft or whatever like this, they have their own authorization, can use whatever quarters they need to, as long as they're not interfering with civilian stuff. There will be no, we don't know. You're never going to get, not rarely would you ever get, in some cases rather, you won't get like, oh yeah, they were testing something, because it's secret and you don't want to acknowledge it was tested or how often it gets tested. And you don't want, you know, the other sides to hear like, oh, well, you know, Tuesday they test this. So every 3 weeks, we think they're ready to go do another test on this stuff. And that's why a lot of those things never got explained. There was an explanation, but it just was never going to be released.
Right.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And also, as we talked about with Project Bluebird and the military silence for most of the Cold War era, where it was more tactically valuable to let the Russians believe that maybe we do have alien technology. Maybe they flying saucer did crash, and that's how we're awesome.
Yeah, whatever can distract from... it's a big Mylar balloon.
Right.
That's not as cool.
Oh, so maybe this is like the false flag. We're supposed to focus on the jetpacks at LAX and not see the weather balloons over at SFO.
No,
it's a distraction.
I mean, it might
technique.
Literally
You're
be.
Right.
No, I mean, what I mean is it literally might be like they might be doing some authorized sort of testing for a government. You know, for the government or Air Force or something like this.
Right, in which case,
but it's not
any discussion about it would be met with radio silence per policy.
Yeah.
So, okay, man, part of me just wants to retread our discussion about what's the coolest way to fly. I'd be terrified of doing a full-on jetpack thing. That short time limit really freaks me out. You know what? I did see a headline, and forgive me if I'm taking us awry, but this is not even a real news story. This is a headline I saw this morning. Was talking about some aircraft company, I want to say it's Boeing, talking about a hydrogen powered zero emissions jet vehicle, which that solves a bunch of things, because we've talked about the idea of going up on anything that was battery powered was a little bit terrifying, because what happens when you run out of battery? Whereas hydrogen is a little bit of sort of a money laundering green operation, in that you have to create energy to make the hydrogen when you take two electrodes and put it in salt water and you get the bubbles.
Oh, LaCroix.
Hydrolysis?
Hydrolysis? I do not know.
Okay, we'll say that.
Hydrolysis.
Maybe that energy comes from coal, maybe it comes from nuclear, maybe it comes from whatever. But the point is, you have a tank with a known quantity of hydrogen, and you have an exchange rate through a fuel cell to exchange that much hydrogen into electricity. And all of a sudden, to my uneducated mind, everything becomes a little bit safer, Does any of that track with you guys? Like, for some reason, I trust a tank of hydrogen more than I trust a battery.
I'm opposite on where I trust, but your energy density in hydrogen is going to be much greater. And that's why, if you're just pure safety, because the energy density is greater, it means the potential for explosion is greater, but also means as something you'd use in an aircraft might be better. So I wouldn't. Hydrogen also is very leaky. It's very hard to contain, which is why I don't really think it's a practical solution for cars. But for airplanes, like that case where you're going from airport to airport, which can have a large hydrogen facility and can put this into aircraft or whatever. I think that's, a viable place to get it. I have, the advantage for aircraft, like I said, is the energy density is what you're, if you have a 20, if you have 20 kilograms of payload, you're going to be better off with hydrogen than even the most advanced battery.
BioCow linked us to an article on electrolysis, which was the word I was trying to access. But
the news report you might have been looking at, Brian, may have been about the Zero Avia. I saw a CNN article very recently about this with a mixture of a hydrogen tank and a fuel cell for a zero emissions jetliner. It also looks like Airbus, I believe, has a hydrogen power thing in the works, the Zero E, a kind of winged
That is sort of a PR coup in that's one of the traditional tropes that people who, anybody who has made a brand for themselves about zero emissions and carbon footprint and all that, it's a popular thing to say, like, you burn more carbon on your way out here on a jetliner or whatever. And so it seems like there's significant motivation to have some kind of zero carbon footprint vehicle.
Yeah, over time. And also, if you follow the trend line for the last 200 years of how we generate energy, the energy is in your hydrogen bonds. That's where the energy comes from. Like your hydrogen, the closer you get to that, the better. Like carbon, etc. And so we use fuels that are more hydrogen rich as we go along. So the more hydrogen rich the fuel is, the better. And eventually, you get to a point where you're just going to use straight up hydrogen, ideally, or just, electricity and a battery to contain it. And this is a great quote. Yeah, Jerry Purnell says, you're talking about how hydrogen loves to leak. There are no hydrogen wells. So, nuclear power plants do not produce a lot of hydrogen. They produce some hydrogen, but not a lot. The hydrogen you get is going to be from your fusile material, and it's going to be insignificant compared to what you can get from, extraction from other means. Although I suppose
if the fringe research is to be believed, what is it? We've been on the cusp of fusion reactors for 50 years now. Latest article I read said, something like an 8 to 10 return on investment for power. And once you have that much power, then all of a sudden you can do electrolysis, and all of a sudden you can make an awful lot of hydrogen that's used to power your fusion thing. And so on.
Chat room points out the hydrogen embrittlement, and that's the start part of the problem, is because your containers and stuff that try to contain it. Hydrogen is not like it is the smallest atom, and it gets
it's
into
the
places.
Sneakiest. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not Manhattan rats.
Yeah. But who knows where we'll go. A lot of options. I think our energy futures can involve in several things, but hydrogen for an airplane, that's a potential case where it makes sense because of, trying to put hydrogen to every single gas station or anything, like, it's ridiculous. Why? When you've got batteries that are, we're getting close to 1,000-mile batteries. So what advantage will hydrogen give us other than really, really expensive infrastructure and something you can't charge at home?
I feel like it's been over a year or two since we last heard about the idea of swapping out full batteries. The idea, like, you would pull into a service station and rather than charging your batteries, they would just pull out your drain battery and pop in a new one. Is that a case where until funding happens, we're probably not going to hear more about that, or was it an inherently bad idea, or maybe it's just between investment cycles? I don't know.
I wonder if you have enough standardized, if you would be able to have standardized batteries to do that
between different manufacturers and all that stuff.
I mean, you would just do it within, because part of the secret to each sort of company is going to be their own battery tech. Tesla had originally built a demonstration of how to pull a battery out of the underneath of the undercarriage and then replace it, which was probably part of trying to meet some sort of California incentive or whatever like that. Now, as somebody just points out in the chat room, like they're building them as part of the chassis now, that their next generation battery tech, it's going to be part of the underframe. So you're not really going to try to swap that out. But also, we've been finding that the batteries, like car batteries, have actually lived a lot, have a lot more longevity than we expected. So, you know, you're in a position where, you know, 10 years from now, when maybe it's time to replace the battery, it's like, well, let's get a new car and just take apart that car and or whatever, you know.
Can I ask a personal question about how long does the excitement aura around owning a Tesla last? Because, like, do you still get giddy?
Oh, yes.
Okay, I figured that was
the case. Yeah, no, it is. It is every time I get in there, you're just, it's just, and they do the little updates and stuff too, but it's just, the thing is like, you might get kind of used to it, and then you have to, then you go ride in a regular car, and they're, I mean, that regular cars are amazing. There's amazing stuff in there.
So some a normal city car, one of those normal cars.
Ass, but it's just, but partially the self-driving and stuff too, is that's the thing too, is you might be on a highway and you're like, if I'm in a rental car, I'm like, oh, let me, oh, you know, and maybe I get into a nice car that's got like a lane assist or something like that. But it's just, you know, the thing that I think part of why you've seen a lot more, you know, Tesla stocks gone up, could be hype, could be whatever. But two is that, like, if you talk to Tesla owners, that's like their next car's going to be an electric, you know?
Right. They're already kind of on that track and they probably won't go back.
Yeah. So just a question people brought in there, like, what if you have the battery and the chassis, and what if the battery goes bad or whatever? Well, part of it is you try to build for redundancy, and you know, what if you have, you know, what if your car is, you know, what if you have a car that's got a bad, you know, axle? What if you have this? What are these other, you know, what if there's, you could say this, the goal is to get the defect rate down so low, you don't, doesn't matter that your chances of having that problem, it's easily remedied.
Yeah.
But it's different. It's a very different way of looking at things.
And though, you know, those, the electric cars, those have, you know, fewer moving parts, right? You would think that the, I don't know, the repair cost that you kind of shave off by not having a combustion engine, you can offset by, okay, well, if they make it a little harder to get at the battery, there's a longer labor time to get to it or whatever. Like, there's still an offset there, I feel like.
I've had my car 3 years. I put air in the tires.
Yeah.
2 years, 2.5 years. I put air in my tires. That's what I do. That's all I do. It's put air.
Oh, yeah, because you don't have to do oil. Oh, my gosh.
No,
wow.
No.
Yep. I believe it was a Consumer Reports thing that recently, I want to say 2 months ago or whatever, came out with electric cars. They last a really, really long time with very little maintenance cost. And I want to say their savings, I'm totally making up this number, but was like $1,000 to $2,000 per year of maintenance stuff you just don't have to do over the lifetime of the car.
Yeah. I had a Toyota before, which I loved and I thought was pretty dependable. But this, like, I literally, the only thing I worry about is just make sure my tire has airs, and that's it. And, but, you know, and there again, it's like, you know, it's a high tech car, and, you know, the first year that the Model 3 came out, there are people with problems and stuff and fit and finish, and, you know, that you're not going to escape physics and not going to escape, you know, production things like that. But the, you know, when I got mine's been great.
Cool.
So, that was, I remember, it's like the last conversation I had with my mechanic is I went to go have my car fixed, my old Toyota fixed. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to go get a Tesla. And the look on his face. And I'm like, it's like you just told, like, you know, a girl that liked you that you're moving to a new town.
Yeah.
I can't wait to move to this new town. And he's like, oh, we can still lubricate the chassis. And I'm like, oh.
Wait, let me know if you want to come by for a car wash.
If your cup holder breaks, they could go fix it. Probably they can order you a new cup holder.
Well, I would just, so that's the thing with Tesla is like, it's like kind of like they do with some like BMW or Mercedes. Like you pull out your phone. If something's broken, you press a button and then you just order service and they send somebody out to where you live to fix it. It's fixable that way.
Fancy.
So
crazy.
No, so, cool. Gentlemen, picks.
Yeah, man. I'm kind of torn between two things. I'll go with the one that I know for sure I liked a lot. And I'm only three episodes into it, but me and the family are finally watching The Queen's Gambit on Netflix.
Mm. Oh, you guys are liking that.
Loving it. Have you watched any?
No, but I've seen it be like the biggest thing on Netflix right now.
Yeah, I look forward to finding out why it's the biggest thing on Netflix, because they very deliberately shoot the story, again, three episodes in, so I got time here. The opening scene, spoiler alert for the first 5 minutes, is our female protagonist is in France, 1967. She wakes up, bursts out of a bath, is clearly not in a great space. There's a partner in the bed who's still asleep. She slams a couple of tranquilizers and a hotel little thing of vodka or whatever, walks it, composes herself, opens the door, flashbulbs go off. She shows up late for what appears to be some kind of championship chess game, and then flashes back to, again, now we're at spoilers for the first 7 minutes, the moment that her mom died in a car crash and she went to an orphanage. So you spend the first couple of episodes with her as an orphan, and then you follow her as her life evolves from there. She's a gifted prodigy when it comes to chess. It's really interesting as somebody who really digs the game of chess, who back in high school read three or four books on the subject and joined the U.S. Chess Federation and stuff. The chessboard is almost perpetually mostly off the screen, just barely visible off to the side. But the pedant in me is constantly looking to verify that they're not messing around on the moves they're making and the setups that they have. Mm-hmm. And you could kind of tell, like, okay, that's a legit thing. You could tell. It's a fine love letter to the game of chess. It looks to be a really interesting character study of somebody who's extraordinarily gifted and develops a habit of you know, dealing with either, I don't know how you would phrase it, mental illness, or as they call it in other circles, twice gifted, you know, being burdened by her own intellect. I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
This is fiction watching it.
Yeah. Right?
This is not a retelling or
correct.
A fictionalization.
Yeah, not based on a true story as far as I could tell, but watching it with the whole fam, our 7-year-old's not interested, but our
really?
12-year-old, 16-year-old, Bonnie and me, having a really good time. And nice. There are brief nods to what's the social scene looked like in the 1960s and, you know, her high school friends, even as she's a prodigy and is, you know, winning all these championships or whatever, like they know she's famous, but they don't know what they can get out of her. And suddenly she feels alone when they're all singing along to a Frankie Valli song or whatever. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. It is stylish as hell. From everything I hear, it sounds an awful lot like what people really like about The Marvelous Miss Maisel, where it's like there's this one unbroken shot midway through episode 3 that there's like 4 different scenes, and I know they're all blended together digitally or whatever, but I'm like, I don't know where you go to get that building to look like it's Las Vegas 1967, and I'm pretty sure those aren't computer-generated backgrounds, stairs, you know, everything. Like, it's a very expensive and lush-looking presentation.
Hmm, cool. Queen's Gambit. And that's Netflix, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I've got a pick. Over last week, I was talking to someone who was telling me about this game that I already know it's out and it's great and everybody loves it. And but it's a type of game that I don't normally play a lot of. It's a roguelike game, so you know, you play it until you can get as far as you can go, and then you die and you start all over. But then the more you play it over and over again, you get better. But I managed to spend a little bit of time this weekend with Hades over the weekend, and man, this thing is really cool. So this is from Supergiant Games. They did Bastion. They've done Transistor, I believe, was one of their other big games. And so it's super stylish. It's very colorful, and it has this really cool aesthetic. And the idea is that you are Zagreus, the prince of Hades, the son of Hades, and you are trying to the god of the underworld, whoever that is.
Yeah, that's Hades.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, sorry, Hades is the land, the god, now you messed me up.
It's not Odin. Not Zeus. It doesn't matter. So you're trying to escape Hades, where your father rules, and each time you try to go, so you're navigating through the different levels of hell, from Tartarus to the lava area to like Elysium, and along the way you're getting blessings from the Olympian gods and from the underworld gods, and it's really interesting. I think the really interesting about it, beyond the gameplay stuff, which is very good, is it's really telling the story as it's happening. It does a really good job of not sitting you down and saying like, okay, you are Zagreus. This is your issue with your father. And
right.
Here are all, like, you just start off and you just play. And as you go through, there's a lot of written dialogue, a lot of recorded voice dialogue that gives you bits and bits of, like, why are you doing this? What really is going to happen if you do this? What is everyone's relation?
In terms of mechanics, it looks like it's got a three-quarters view. It reminds me a little bit of the Diablo franchise. What would it, my friend derisively calls all these games, and with affection, Monster Pinata. Is it the type of thing where you bust open a bad guy and then loot falls out and then you go on to the next bad guy?
No, this is more action-y, more hack and slashy. So you're not really waiting for like a buff, for buffs and stuff. You're walking around and dashing and trying to time it right.
But is there things to place on a rag doll or on a body doll of like, give me this shield and now I've got more of this?
No. You pick a weapon at the start. So there's like 8 different weapons you can choose from. So the sword and spear there's a gun you get at some point. So those all have their own move sets. And as you're going through, the buffs that they give you, the boons from the different gods say like, okay, hey, this will give you more attack, or when you attack, you'll give them this status effect. The actual gameplay loop of attacking and stuff is the same, but you get those buffs on top of it. But I just think it's really stylish and it's really interesting, because when you die, you know, you go back to the house of Hades and you see your father there all the time, and all of the other people who occupy the house, and everyone knows that you're trying to escape, and no one like really cares.
So it's like 2020 the game.
Yeah.
You're trapped at home with dad and you're trying to get the hell out.
And supposedly there's a lot more story stuff going on. I think the thing that I always bounce off with roguelike games is that I just don't ever get good at them. You know, what is interesting about Hades is they have a god mode where they give you damage resistance, and the more you lose, the more you get that damage resistant buff. So you start off with like 20%, and every time you die it goes up 2%. I don't know what the max is, but even if it's like 50%, that extends your gameplay a long time, because I think you get the sense that it actually does want you to finish and get to the credits, because you know, it doesn't just end.
Oh, that's interesting. So, like, if you told me every time you die, we're going to make the game easier for you, I would be mad. But if you told me every time I die, I'm going to come back tougher.
Just a little bit tougher.
Even though that's technically the exact same thing, somehow I feel cool with it.
Yeah. You know, there's Rogue Legacy, which is another big roguelike game that I could never get into just because I couldn't get good at it. I feel like I couldn't get good at it, where Hades feels like it's structured for you to figure out everything that's going on and see the narrative, that there's a really strong, clear narrative there, and you get to see all. So I'm excited for it. I see what everyone's talking about in terms of maybe game of the year status. So,
wow.
The Hades, it's only on the PC and the Switch right now, but I'm sure it's going to come to consoles and stuff. Andrew, what do you got?
I have a little pick. It's a TV series. It's entering into its second season. I don't know if you've heard of this, called The Mandalorian.
I've heard of this.
Gently dancing around spoilers, what did you think of the character that we met this week?
So you all watched it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll just talk about in general. Like, I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. And, you know, I get that not everybody gets to watch things, you know, right when they come out. What I loved is there's still a, like, it was a longer episode, which is good, but the longer episodes often there's a pacing sort of thing. And that was, this felt like there's this sort of pacing kind of thing. And kind of the dialogue is a little comic book kind of thing, which, and I loved it. Let me make that very clear. I loved it. And, you know, my issue with the kind of like last season was there are some shows or episodes that were great, and other episodes I'm like, I want people to go back and look at the lens of like when it's really good, what it does, and then look at these and tell me like, do you think that that was as tight of the way they could have told that story? Here, I liked it. I think it had some of the same sort of like length issues or things, or there could have been tighter, or there could have been more going on in a thing. But overall, I mean, I love the show, and the production values are insane. Like, what we saw was incredible, you know, and I would say from a storytelling thing, it is a very linear show, and it is like, we're going to go do blank, and you know blank's going to happen, and then this was an episode of like, really weird that they're trying to do this instead of doing that, this is blank, and then you get to like, well, now we're going to try to do blank this way, and you're like, oh, okay, got it. So we spent 15 minutes here, although we were going to get to where we're going to go initially, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I trust you, Andrew. I trust you, Bryce, to believe me when I say that I say this without any indication that I'm not loving the series and I'm not pleased and I'm not happy that I watched it. Mm. This episode, a bit of a sillier start to season two than I expected. Seemed kind of silly.
So I did not watch season one and probably won't watch season two, but I'm looking at the Wikipedia for the plot, and there's some words in here that did not know were in Star Wars. Specifically one that starts with a D. I did not know they had those in this.
Sorry. I'm thinking of all the things that are inappropriate for Star Wars.
Is a
dog?
Can I say it? I don't know if it's. I didn't know they were dragons in Star Wars.
It's put air quotes around it. It's what the locals call. As a matter of fact, in the original Star Wars: A New Hope, the very first episode, Obi-Wan's entrance is heralded by this loud growling sound that he said in canon is him imitating the call of the Krayt dragon to scare off the not their word, sand people, the Tusken Raiders.
Not their people. So that was a thing that kind of, that there are sand people in this episode. And Tusken I will Raiders. Say that
definitely not Native Americans. Definitely not cowboys.
They're not all Tusken Raiders, just so you know. Okay, either, good okay?
point. Some of them are Tusken trying... homemakers, Tusken podcasters,
yeah. Tusken gatherers.
So they're like listening to their scenes where you're listening to them talk, and it goes on and on, and it is a grating, not a fun experience. Where you're like, I get it. They sound horrible. To hearing that language, hearing a conversation in there, I'm like, this could be 5 minutes shorter. And we get it. You know, wow. there's a lot of little bits of that in Mandalorian. A lot of like, this is a little bit too long. We get the point. I'm not having fun. I don't. Werner Herzog is not directing this as a documentary. So,
wait, was the director on this one?
No. I'm saying John Favreau.
Yeah. To be honest, I was a bit surprised that John Favreau was the director of this one, just because of like there was an economy to the first episode, which I believe he also directed of season one.
David Filoni did the first one.
Oh, was it?
He didn't direct any. Yeah. John Favreau didn't direct any.
I take all that back
because of the light.
Today I learned. There are delightful moments that I liked quite a bit about this episode in general. Bit long, bit fatty, bit silly.
Is Baby Yoda still in it? Still got that little rat in there?
Yeah, dude. If you want to see him constantly closing up his clamshell to hide, boy, do I have the episode for you.
I'm the Baby Yoda actor.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm very happy with it. I always thought it was tedious whenever people say, we should just shut this franchise down for a while. It's like, the problem ain't the franchise. Problem is the decisions being made about it. You know, if like, you're like, imagine Mandalorian didn't exist and we ended with episode 9, people would be going, it's Star Wars. It's just, it's done out. You know, that's the problem. And because Mandalorian launched before episode 9, we're like, nope, problem is clearly not Star Wars.
Right. The problem is the stories that we are choosing to tell, because straight up, look, Mandalorian makes no bones about it, as best I could tell. It's if you want to know how your parents felt about spaghetti westerns in the 1950s and you know, watching, I just realized I can't tell you any of the names of the cowboys and Indian stuff. All the tropes, all the structure, all the done and done again a million times stories are there. They're just really good, really well told.
Yeah. Somebody says, love The Mandalorian, but does feel like a minimalist version of The Witcher. I think Witcher's a better show.
Wow.
Ooh.
That's really big. Makes me want to watch The Witcher now. Wow.
You haven't seen The Witcher?
No, because I heard it was a little bit over the top CW at times, and so I didn't quite, I was waiting to hear more.
Not enough to annoy me, and I am the one that will scream CW, CW, CW. I really like The Witcher. I don't want to oversell it to you, but just, okay, if you want to go watch think back when your nerd friends were thinking about talking about D&D role games and think of like you're going to pick up a really good ElfQuest novel or a Witcher novel, really. You're going to just have a fun experience with the story. It's the non-linearity of which things are told. There's a little out of sequencing thing. It doesn't need to do it, which is annoying. But once you get to win, once you get, okay, I get the context. Really, really, like, I don't know anybody who's watched The Witcher and wasn't like, oh, didn't think it was wonderful.
Wow. Maybe that's one I'll try to get my 16-year-old daughter into, because she, if she's
into D&D, right?
Well, if she taps out, it's because she takes her fantasy so seriously that she's like, yeah, I don't think they're taking this serious enough. And it sounds like The Witcher has a deep and rich enough back lore.
Yeah, it's good. And you saw that one of our commenters said, love The Witcher more than Man. Like, I love Mandalorian. I love Star Wars. But for tight storytelling and working at the medium that I never, a storytelling that I was not familiar with, loved Witcher. And I would say, like, people said, producers said, make it more Game of Thrones. No, it wasn't the producers telling them to make it more. It was more Netflix telling them to do it, but without giving them Game of Thrones level money. Because there are scenes that you feel like, if this were Game of Thrones, there'd be 30 times as many people here. But Witcher is really good questing kind of great sort of story. Again, Tally Zarell says it, so what more can I say?
There you go.
Yep. So, gentlemen, toss a coin to your Mandalorian. It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.